Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. This is program number 559, August the 23rd, 1982. Another month is tucked away. It certainly goes quickly. Before we begin the program, I want to mention the usual disclaimer. I forgot it last week. Anything that I say on this station, on these broadcasts, I am responsible for. The station is not responsible for the information or the names that I refer to or talk about. That is solely my research and my responsibility, and they are clear of any responsibility with that regard. Last week, when the program ended, I was talking about global resources and the complication of the power struggle, the proxy vote that will be coming up in September. For that corporation, I was talking about Robert Vesco and investment overseas and the interest, the suggested interest of the secret stockholders behind the conflict of global resources. But I wanted to mention there was one section of the program I didn't have time to put on, and those were several things that happened in Ireland and in an airplane crash I briefly might have referred to, and I did put it on the printed sheet that went with the broadcast because Robert Vesco also had connections to the Charter Oil Company in addition to this corporation, the Global Resources, where the man holding the large amount of stocks, Erskine Carter, was killed in New York City in April 16th, just this last April, and this is setting off this big controversy. There was also an airplane crash, helicopter crash of four Charter executives. You might have seen it. July 30th, 1982. This was just this last month, just a couple of weeks ago. This airplane went down with Jack Donnell, president of Charter, written up in Fortune magazine, this company, Dudley Parker, president of Charter Oil, the chairman and the president, Barry Green, executive vice president, Jay Lehman, senior vice president of Charter Oil, Raymond Mason, Charter founder, has a castle in Ireland, and they were visiting Mr. Mason when this airplane went down. This company had just signed a large, huge contract for a refinery in the Bahamas in 1980, and it was a very controversial company. It was one that Billy Carter and Robert Vesco were working with at the height of, at the time that Jimmy Carter was president, and there was an article in 1980, this was April 7th, 1980, during the Carter administration, Robert Vesco linked a $2 billion deal between Charter Oil and Libya. And this has to do with, it's from the Chicago Tribune, serving as a backdrop to the Billy Carter Libya affair is a tantalizing saga of a corporate merger involving a deal of Libyan oil that makes the $20 million a year scheme hatched by President Carter's brother look like peanuts. Now, this is a $2 billion a year conglomerate, Charter Oil, thriving $2 billion a year. They print, incidentally, Red Book, Ladies' Home Journal, the Philadelphia Bulletin, and a lot of things were happening in Philadelphia at the time that this Charter, the people from the Charter Oil went down. Cortland Gross from Lockheed was murdered, and his wife and the maid. They haven't found the people who murdered them. They published a Philadelphia Bulletin, and they were insurance companies, banks, radio stations, book publishers, and so forth. Now, this was a big controversial link of Jimmy Carter and Billy Carter and Libya and Gaddafi to the Carter Oil Company. And then just this last month, the four executives went down in one airplane, and that was quite a loss. I have a list of the missing and the dead millionaires, and the ones from Charter Oil among those very wealthy people. And again, Robert Vesco had a link to the Charter Oil people and also to the Global Resources, and I wanted to mention that. As I say, I did have it on the printed sheet, and I didn't get it on the air on time. Also, one other item that was on the printed sheet that accompanies the tapes was the quick trip of the Attorney General of Ireland to the United States. He took a two-day trip and then went back because Premier Charles Haughey, H-A-U-G-E-Y, of Ireland, the head of the Irish Republic, the Premier called the Attorney General a long-wanted murderer. A man they were searching for the biggest manhunt in Irish history was located, And his home address was the Attorney General of Ireland. And these stories are making the newspaper one day, and then they're pushed to the side by a lot of other matters that may or may not be more important. But this very important Attorney General for the entire country of Ireland had used his home and address for a man that they were looking for the biggest manhunt in Irish history. In 1970, the defense attorney for Mr. Hoy, that was the Prime Minister of Ireland now, was the finance minister, was tried and acquitted of using government money to fund the purchase of arms for the nationalist guerrillas in Northern Ireland. So the Attorney General is housing and companion of a long-wanted man who did double murders in Ireland, and I thought that was getting up to the highest levels of law enforcement. It isn't just Watergate with John Mitchell, the Attorney General, being put into jail, and he wasn't really put in for the right crimes of conspiracy to murder and things that the Nixon administration did to get Richard Nixon into power. But he went in for covering up parts of the Watergate story. But here's the Attorney General in Mexico, in Ireland, being involved with a long-wanted criminal that they're searching for. And earlier last year, well, it was in March of this year, there was an article, Mexican officials investigate a plane crash that killed 7. This was a plane crash that left Calexico, Mexico, and it involved the Bellomini family, B-E-L-L-O-U-M-I-N-I. An article in this description of that plane crash, it said, Bellomini's younger brother, George, was not in the plane. He was reportedly helping Billy Carter to try and arrange the oil to impart from Libya for the Charter Oil Company in 1930. Now, this family was very close to, again, to Billy Carter, to the Charter Oil. They live in California and had important connections to Libya, the CIA, to the president's brother, to this large oil company where 4 people just died 2 weeks ago. But earlier in this year, in April, another person involved in that was killed in a plane crash. Their airplane did not return from Mexico, and 4 of them were killed in a plane crash. So a lot of people in the corporate effort to get to the top don't always make it, or once they get there, they have these accidents that come down and are pretty horrendous. And speaking of the top, I'm not going to update high society. I've been calling it high society recently on the tape, the things that have happened to Nancy Reagan or the Pope or Roberta Calvi or the Vatican or Paul Marcinkus. I'm going to leave them and go into specifically the Middle East tonight for the entire hour, the remaining hour, on the questions of the Middle East, because that is big in the news, the PLO leaving Lebanon and what is going on there, and some news clippings I have and opinions on the subject. But I noticed that Alfred Bloomingdale died today. He was the one who was just sued by Vicky Morgan for his $18,000 a month salary. He was on Ronald Reagan's CIA Intelligence Committee. His wife is Nancy Reagan's best friend, Mrs. Bloomingdale. They were in the news within the last few weeks, 3 weeks, because of the scandals of the sadomasochism and the whips and chains and the money guaranteed to Vicky and the longtime mistress and seeing her every day in and out while he called the White House, her salary coming from Florida. And I'll do more on that later. The death of Alfred Bloomingdale doesn't end the case any more than Cardinal Cody in Chicago. There's a new cardinal now. They're celebrating a new cardinal in Chicago. But where the $1 million went and the woman that he gave it to and what they were doing with the money in Florida are still what I call loose ends. The news media tucks them away, but then 2 or 3 years later, they reappear to haunt these people, and they appear bigger than ever. Incidentally, one other item about the news media. I got the London Times. I picked it up on the way to the station and was reading it this evening, and there was an article. This is the August 15th, 1982, an article about Scotland Yard and George Corkula. And the article says the Scotland Yard used the dealer of death, Corkula, and bought their security equipment from him and didn't know who he was. 3 years ago, I had on my broadcast that George Corkula for the CIA and FBI supplied Exxon Security, Scotland Yard Security, He works with Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple. This is Murder Incorporated, who are closing rank or moving in now. Edwin Wilson's in the United States. Corkle is in Madrid. Turple is in Lebanon. His name was never mentioned in all these skirmishes. Where is Frank Turple? These guys were arming Gaddafi and Idi Amin and setting up Carlos the Terrorist and the Black September and the murdering all over the European nations and the what looked like the left terrorists, the Claire Sterling and the Saturday Evening Post, keep insisting come from the Soviet Union. Korkla is in Madrid, and they finally admitted that he was supplying equipment for Scotland Yard. As a matter of fact, the one of the men from Scotland Yard said, I was having a cup of tea one day, and he saw the story in the newspaper. He didn't know that these people were supplying him with his security equipment for Scotland Yard, but I knew it 3 years ago, so that's how efficient Scotland Yard is, I guess. I can't figure out why. Well, he's lying, of course, but now that Corkle is surfacing and going to have trials if he lives, Scotland Yard has a disclaimer. We didn't know who he was. And Turple is telling the London Times that he worked for the CIA and FBI up till the time he was arrested, and that's what I've said for the past years, ever since they were arrested in New York. Now, getting on to the Lebanon crisis, I want to cover a lot of issues, so I'll move quickly. I do talk quickly, and maybe get as much as I want to into this particular hour. There were two things that set off the Israeli invasion into Lebanon. And incidentally, Jimmy Carter said on the radio yesterday that Ronald Reagan knew in advance that they were going to do it. Jack Anderson had written they were going to do it. There were two, if not more, reasons for going into there, and there are two reasons why Ronald Reagan couldn't do a thing about it. This is my opinion. One was an arrest in Bonn, Germany. This was written up in the Houston Post, March 30th, 1981. It says, International Right-Wing Web Uncovered. Now, what happened was that there was a crackdown in Bonn, Germany, and they got into the apartment of a man named Manfred Roeder, R-O-E-D-E-R, a Nazi, Manfred Roeder, who had a list of the connecting links of the Odessa, that important Nazi network that Otto Skorzeny set up, that I talk about all the time, that was set up by this Fritz Kramer, Kissinger, Haig, and it originated out of World War II, where the headquarters were set up in Madrid to begin the Fourth Reich. Now, they broke into this apartment, and Bonn, Germany was forced to go into 450 homes where they collected information and mailing lists and diaries that included the address of the web in the United States, the World Nazi Organization with the lower levels of the terrorist groups, in Canada, in Lebanon, the use of the PLO in Lebanon, in Iran, and then it went into France and into Italy and into Spain. And when the Italian government was splintered by Licio Gelli fleeing to Argentina with the P2 crisis, the Masonic scandal breaking open, and this was the Permandex, the group that killed and networked, killed public leaders all over the world, and I clued into them studying John Kennedy's assassination. When they picked up the diaries, and the Mossad and Israeli intelligence can certainly figure these things out. If you read it in the Houston Post, the Mossad would know who Karl Heinz Hoffmann is and the letters of contact. And once you had the address of who in the United States was involved, who in Canada, who in Italy, who in France, and who in Lebanon, and the role of the PLO, at that point, if not before, Mr. Begin and Mr. Sharon say, let's go. Reagan can't stop us because these people work with Reagan. They work with Haig. They work with the Pentagon. Let's end this border at least once and for all. And I mentioned before that there was another diary that was found June the 3rd, 1982, in London. There was an assassination attempt on Shlomo Argov. He's the Israeli ambassador to London. That was June the 3rd. Now, this murder attempt, he's living, was the overt excuse for them to tear into Lebanon, and nothing could stop the Israelis at that point. There wasn't one Arab country. Saudi Arabia made a blank charge, we'll take money out of American banks. But Mr. Habib went back and forth, and there wasn't any way between the information that was found in London, because, again, when they arrested the men in London, they were from Iraq and they were from Jordan. They weren't PLO. They were bigger than that. And what they had was a death list, which included not only Jewish people like the Israeli ambassador, but heads of states, because many people have been killed by this gang, including James Angleton, who didn't like Mountbatten. Lord Mountbatten was no hero, and he had his faults, and he was involved in many, many scandals, from the sexual voyeurism on down to a lot of other problems. But the CIA had a hit list, and there's a man in the prison claiming that he worked for the CIA and killed Mountbatten. And there's a public record of the antagonism of the CIA for these people. So in between killing a few Jews in synagogues and on the streets or ambassadors, heads of states have been killed all over the world since World War II, literally hundreds of them in coups, and they use these leftists to come in and do it, and if they pick up somebody, it's a lone assassin. So there was a list in London June the 3rd, and on June the 6th, the invasion began, and there was nothing to stop General Sharon. He could go carte blanche, and that is the way he went, and I've said all along nothing would stop him till they were ready to set the terms and the world would have to live by it. There was another factor that was important. It was Arafat was bragging about his contacts, and the Wall Street Journal had an article in January. Arafat says the PLO will aids foreign guerrilla units. And he was bragging, this is the Wall Street Journal, that he gave $12 million to Nicaragua, to the Sandinistas, and that he would give money to El Salvador and Angola. Now, Arafat has to become a non-person in terms of an army and neutralized, because as soon as we get the Middle East cleaned up and the Falklands taken care of, the next bloodbath is going to be Cuba, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Guatemala. And then it's going to be unpardonable, because the American people have had enough chance to say we've had enough already. What's going on down there now in Guatemala with the born-again Christian from the Jonestown, Ukiah, who works with World Vision. He was put in by World Vision, and I did many broadcasts on them, and I'll do more next week. The role of World Vision and the John Hinckley family, Nicaragua, Central America is going to be really decimated. You saw how the weapons worked in Lebanon. They'll be pulling them down in Central America. So Arafat, who has been funded by Wilson and Turple and Corkle and the CIA, has served his purpose, because he dangled and carried on enough activity, and when the chips were down and the teams that were paying him, like Wilson and Turple and Corkle, were being pulled in, they could say, okay, get out now, yeah, so let's move on, you know, take you out of this place and spread you around all these different countries and cool it, because the source of funds, for one thing, through the Panamanian banks, for example, Paul Marcinkus' $1.4 billion is in these hidden dummy fronts, and it's paying these people, and half of that money is paid for terrorism and the hit teams, it won't look good to go right up to the top, to the Vatican banks, and they're having their own troubles, and I'll go into that next week. I'm going to get off their back a while, but Arafat has to get out of Central America, and this will neutralize him in that respect. Now, there was one article in New Solidarity that suggested that Abu Nidal, he's the man who did the shooting in London, the attempted murder of the Israeli ambassador, actually worked for the Mossad. This is the July 26, 1982. PLO leader says Abu Nidal was sent by Sharon. Now, Sharon intended to go through there like he did with a bulldozer. They called it a blitzkrieg. Nothing was going to stop him, but he needed an excuse. And there was an article in Le Monde in France, a newspaper, by the ambassador from Iraq to France, saying that the attackers of Argov in London were connected with Mossad, and that this was Israelis' Reichstag. After all, we've used them with the Mayaguez and the Pueblo. We have tried the Gulf of Tonkin. We've used excuses to escalate the war, to get our toe into things. This could be Sharon's Reichstag. The excuse was to work with the man, Abu Nidal, who did the shooting in London. That's a possibility. It was written up, and it was written up in Le Monde, that this was an excuse, that they intended to go, but they needed an excuse. Now, there are some Sharones. There are several Sharones I want to talk about. There's several of them. Ariel Sharon is the head of the defense in Israel. And they had an election today, Mr. Gamaliel, the new president of Lebanon, long selected, like Ronald Reagan was selected for us, I believe, as early as the late 40s he was selected, certainly by the 50s. A New Solidarity, July 23rd, 1982, has a long article exposed the Sharon-Gamaliel dope partnership. Now, this is an important article, and I'm going to share it with you because you can watch in the future and see what happens. The gist of this article is that the destruction of Lebanon was planned a long time ago. It was planned by Gamaliel, who's a neo-fascist leader, and fascism is just fine with Israel. In fact, he was on television this morning after his wonderful one-man victorious election, and they said, people call you a fascist. He said, let them call me what they want. He could care less. He says, if that's what they want to call me, let them call me a fascist. This article says the destruction of Lebanon was planned by him in a secret partnership between Sharon and Gamaliel to disintegrate Lebanon. And it was planned at least 2 months ago in a secret meeting, and that Gamaliel would be the titular head next month. Again, this was written in July. And that Sharon's troops already had seized tons of Lebanese hashish and opium, and that prior to 1975, when Henry Kissinger set up the civil war in Lebanon, that's when the drug traffic began to flow. And this is all history, and this is true. The black economy moved in when the central government and the legitimate economy collapsed, and social violence to date, according to this article, is 100,000 lives gone. The organized crime syndicate will use Lebanon now. They will use the routes of Ariel Sharon and Bashir Gamaliel that they've set up. And the Golden Crescent area, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, according to this article, will use three ports. And they've divided these ports up. The names are on the map, of course, and the family of Gamaliel will be in control of these ports. The heroin traffic will continue from Lebanon to the United States. 30% of Lebanon's gross national product in 1981 came from the opium and hashish traffic coming through Pakistan and through down in Iran and through Lebanon. Untold billions are deposited in secret accounts in Lebanon. This article says there are 120 banks from around the world, secret, unregulated narcotics profit. So while the bombing was going on in Lebanon, the narcotics traffic that never was interrupted, the Golden Crescent routing of the opium and the poppy continued. Henry Kissinger arranged the Civil War. He toppled every government so far in the Golden Crescent. The Pakistani Prime Minister Ali Bhutto was told in 1977 by Kissinger that he would make Ali Bhutto a horrible example for trying to turn Pakistan into a modern nation. He was murdered, he was hung, and then the drug traffic from Pakistan just poured into the United States. I have a copy of a transcript made by a listener and friend of World Watchers who takes shortwave and listens to Moscow radio every night. And recently, June the 6th, they discussed the opium poppies, the Afghanistan freedom fighters, allegedly, that have gone into the borders, are pouring the drugs and opium and increasing the growth of the poppies in Pakistan. And this spring, a court in New York sentenced 11 mafia men to smuggle $90 million worth of heroin into New York City. It was a trial not given the headlines, but they agreed not for a public hearing. It had to do with the Afghan-Pakistan border where it was grown. And, of course, Lebanon banks and Lebanon will be the central place for pouring in of these narcotics. This article goes into the role in Iran when Henry Kissinger was close to the Shah of Iran, and the Shah was told to get out for a while, come to the United States, and he was in Mexico and Panama and then died in Egypt. As soon as he left, the poppy and the opium increased, and Iran is again producing massive amount of pouring the opium. Lebanon, Israel, and Colonel Haddad will control the drugs in the Persian Gulf. Pierre Gamiel is one member of the family. The aging founder of the, he worked with the Falange, with Hitler's Nazi Falange. He married his, he modeled rather his paramilitary organization after the Nazi Party, the elder Pierre Gamiel, and he kept close ties to the Syrians. And he will control, the family will control what he set up with the Nazi regime plus the dope dealing. Amin Gamiel is in charge of connections with the terrorist wing of the PLO. And this article refers to George Habash. And, of course, on other programs, I've mentioned George Habash and his other brother in Chile, who worked with the helping overthrow Salvador Allende. They worked with Larry McDonald, the senator from Georgia. His campaign money is raised by these people in Murrieta, Georgia. They're linked to the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Carlos, and Mitchell Werbel, the man who makes the silencers for these assassinations. Amin Gamiel was in charge of the PLO and George Habash with the Black September, the Baader-Meinhof, the Japanese Red Army, and so forth. Then there's another member of the family, Bashir Gamiel, who runs the Israeli connections. Now, it's been said on the media today and for a long time that Mr. Sharon of Israel is a close friend of Gamiel, that he selected the president. Imagine, he selects the president and the terms for Lebanon, and he Bashir Gamiel runs the Israeli connection, and he'll join with the drug sales with Ariel Sharon, Israel's Minister of Defense. Now, this article says, what is in store for Lebanon? Sidon, the port town, is under the Shiite control and the Muslims, and it'll run that way. Tyre, T-I-Y-R-E, the port town, will be under Mr. Haddad's control, and Junay, north of Beirut, the Falangists, far-right fascists, will control. They control the town now, and these will be the three outlets for drugs and guns on the Lebanese coast. There's a British intelligence agent referred to in this article, Bernard Lewis, who's at Princeton University, who was credited with designing the plan for Lebanon so that the war went on schedule and Princeton had a finger in it. In addition, Henry Kissinger called in the expert, Mr. Lutwak. You know the name Edward Lutwak, L-U-T-T-W-A-K. He's from Georgetown University, and he wrote the book Coup d'etat. And it's a primer for people on how to overthrow a country and take over the country. And he's an advisor to Ronald Reagan. He's right there in Washington, D.C., working with Gene Kirkpatrick. And he's Alexander Haig, Secretary of State, worked close and commissioned Edward Lutwak from Georgetown University to study the prospects of dividing Lebanon. Now, that's his expertise. That's what he does. And then from Notre Dame, a fellow Georgetown member came from the university there to help them set up the plans after the June 6th invasion, what they would do in Lebanon afterwards. So they had a professor, the former president for Fordham, also over there helping them. And this article goes into at length of the banks of Lebanon and their links down to Venezuela, the Byblos Bank, B-Y-B-L-O-S Bank, and Caracas. And I won't go into that now. And it's an article about Gamiel, the Fouad, F-O-U-A-D, Gamiel, the cousin of the Falangist founder, Pierre Gamiel, is manager of a bank, the Beirut Bank in Bulgaria. And this article alleges that the gun for Ajah, the man who picked it up in Zurich, who made the assassination attempt on the Pope, got it in Bulgaria. And all of this violence and all of this far right-wing violence that's blamed on the Soviet Union has to do with drug traffic and planning to divide up Lebanon as a stepping stone and a clear path for banking and drugs. And the important thing is that this was written a month ago, but of course it said that the Israeli defense minister and Mr. Gamiel made this deal. So Sharon is happy, Gamiel is president, and let's see how many more drugs come into this country. One quick item, we have one more minute before the break. There are some interesting articles that show that the government, the United States government, was behind this invasion. One was an article by former CIA Director Stansfield Turner, no great liberal, he was an admiral from Annapolis. He said August the 7th, when the battle was its bloodiest, that Israel was too weak, that it shouldn't stop, that it should keep going, that America's weakness was in Vietnam, that we were defeated because we were weak, and that they should keep giving it to those people over in Lebanon and not back out. That was from Stanfield Turner, August the 7th, when those poor native populations were being completely decimated. It's 1 hour now. We'll take a break, and I'll get back with you in 1 minute.